Welcome to the Plastic Plesiosaur Podcast.
We are your hosts, Trey the Explainer.
And me, Miles Greb.
A podcast about the natural world.
Things that people claim are part of the natural world.
And things that used to be.
Okay, Trey, we're back, buddy.
Yeah, we are.
It's finally a sunny day up here in Seattle, which is nice because, let me tell you, we had two sunny days and we're like, oh, spring's here. Like the little baby birds were coming around. And then it rained for 3 weeks straight after that. So we're like, oh, it was a false spring. But now it is sunny and I can start going fishing again.
That's crazy. That's crazy about Seattle, that it just rains and rains and rains. It's been raining here, but we have like nice days every now and then.
Yeah. Well, we didn't, but now we do.
You also get banks of mist rolling in from the sea.
That's true. Oh, and by the way, Kozeman is on the show this time. Hello. We don't need to do a special introduction for him because he's friend of the show.
Hello, everybody. He was on awesome.
Yes. A lot of people wanted us to invite him back on, and I said, you know what, we should do it, especially after the last episode. We were kind of crazy, so we thought we'd have a fun time this one. So,
well, thanks for calling me, and thanks to all your viewers for inviting me. I certainly had time the last time. So,
always well, that's good. What episode did we do when you were on? I'm trying to remember.
It was one with the like the you were talking about like the devil babies and stuff like that.
Oh yeah,
like the Turkish cryptids. That was awesome.
Oh, that part was cool. Hearing about the Turkish cryptids.
Yeah, we started with your review of that one cryptid show, and then we segued into Turkish cryptids and all other sorts of weirdness. But yeah, that was
that's the kind of stuff we talk about on this show.
Yeah.
So what have you been working on recently, Kozeman? You got any cool projects going on?
Well, I'm splitting time between the two big life projects, the rewrites of my now popular books, All Tomorrows and Snayad, but also the vicissitudes of life have forced me to take commissions for money. So actually, if any of you want to have your creations, it could be something for your D&D campaign, your own science fiction book, whatever. If you want to get that rendered by the eccentric creator of All Tomorrows, I'm also game. I'm doing a brisk run of those. Plus, I'm busy on my YouTube channel, and I got like a minor congregation of 42,000 people, maybe 43,000. And I'm also pumping out stuff for that. And then between those and...
Well, that's like, awesome.
Yeah, between those and real life stuff, you know, I'm keeping busy and in a good way. So knock on wood, God's in his heaven, all is well with the world.
So I know a lot of listeners of the show probably know, and of course we know, but you want to tell anybody that's new what All Tomorrows is and was?
Okay, so if you don't know, I'm a science fiction writer and illustrator of some repute, and since the last 3 years, I have been lucky, I've been blessed by the algorithm, and also I've been blessed by cool friends and people who helped along with my stuff, like you guys, and also the unknown guy behind the Alt-Shift-X channel. He boosted my...
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah. He boosted my juvenile science fiction story, All Tomorrows, and All Tomorrows is a future evolution of humanity, and, you know, it's given me a nice shot in the arm for popularity and connections, and you know, it certainly helped. So I'm really grateful for that. So if you just Google All Tomorrows, actually, you can find and read this book. It's for free. Recently, though, it has had its first OG print run in Thailand.
Out of really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
So, yeah, a company named Times Publishing in Thailand approached me a few months ago saying, all right. And they like, I said, all right. And they said, all right. And they said, okay. And they said, ka-ching. And it was a really generous offer. So awesome. They have now the Thai printing rights. And then they printed, like they did a splendid job with the translation. And the print looks really nice. So if there are any listeners from Thailand, you can actually find and read All Tomorrows in a special bespoke edition in the Thai language. And it contains
Yeah, I'm looking up pictures of it. It's gorgeous. It's a gorgeous looking cover and stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah,
it contains a brand new chapter about like behind the scenes approaches to each creature in the book. So only Thai friends get to read that. Plus, there's a lot of new art by some very talented local illustrators. And if any other global publishers want to go that way, you know, because this is the old book. So I'm just going to like harp on about this for one more second and I'm going to cede the floor.
So no, you're good. We love your work and it's you know, we're happy to platform it, buddy. So no worries.
So the original All Tomorrows, everybody can always read it for free online. It's like, It's a gift from me to God now, and everyone can get it. But if any publishers in any specific country want to have their shot at it and like make it as a, you know, dead tree purchasable object kind of book, they're more than welcome. You know where to find me. Hit me up. That's all I'll say for now. And once again, if you also want to follow me on YouTube, find me on YouTube and like follow me there. And if you want me to draw your creatures, you know where to find me. You know where to find me. Just come to a triple road intersection in the forest, middle of the night, and yeah.
We leave out some strange berries that you found.
Leave out some coffee and some, yeah. Oh God, Culver's fucking burgers. I love those things. How is it with you guys?
Yeah, I had one of my books picked up by a French publisher and they paid me for it and they never actually published it.
So, oh damn.
Yeah. I thought it'd be cool to have a French version of Clovis, but it never happened. So
that's really based.
Oh well.
And they at least pay you for it.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah.
But now I'm out of copies of Clovis, so it's kind of, I need to figure that out actually. Because the original print run was like 8,000 copies and that sold out, and so now I don't have any.
So that's
I gotta figure something out with that.
Would you ever consider doing it on a pay-to-print kind of thing, like Lulu.com?
Yeah, maybe. I tour Comic Cons and stuff a lot and do book signings and stuff, so I kind of need to have like a decent amount of stack of books for me to sell at those things. So I need to get it printed again. It just, you know, it's comic world is weird, man. So,
and that's I'll get one it figured way. Out. That's one way I envy all of you guys in the US of A. You actually like get to go to Comic Cons and drive around. And like, I was just speaking to an American friend earlier and she was telling me that, there's a mattress. It's dirty. I'm going to get a new one. I'm like, you can fucking afford a new mattress? And like certain things, believe me, certain things are just so much freaking easier up there. And you got so many more options. Which is why I actually applied for the Green Card Diversity Lottery. And I'm really excited. If it happens, I'll be American. And I don't know, like.
No way. Yeah. No way. We hear first. That's crazy. It's crazy. Well, that's awesome. I hope you get it.
Yeah, I'll sponsor you if you need a
local. Cozman in the United States would be amazing. That would be crazy. Crazy adventure right there.
You can get married. You know, it's just like one dream I have. So, yeah.
One dream. You're welcome to come to Seattle. You can hang out at my place if you want.
Yeah, we got to hang out. Like, if you do, you got to hang out. If I ever go to Turkey, we got to hang out either, too.
Well, look, for your particular interest, Turkey has more Greek monuments than Greece and more Roman monuments than Italy, plus a heck of a lot of weird esoteric cultures, and like if you come over, you'll only pay for your airplane tickets, like eating, accommodation. I like, my word is my deed. Oh. So it's all on me.
Thank you That's very nice of you. I remember I used to follow you had a Tumblr. You might still have a Tumblr, but there was like even like a blog post that you had, and it was like, it was documenting like your adventures kind of like wandering around in like the countryside.
And
there you would find like these wooden sculptures and monuments and stuff, and like fruit in like weird shapes. I love that stuff. I just remember that years and years ago.
Actually, that turned into a book, you know. It's called The Forests of the Afterlife. It's in the English language. It's basically, it's a visual history documentation of this extremely arcane culture of tree-shaped and even anthropomorphic village tombstones in rural Turkey. And this is a folk art. You can maybe compare it to those amazing founding father skull decorated tombstones you get to see in like Pennsylvania and New England and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it's actually a local tradition. It's very old, and ostensibly it's Muslim, but I think at least semantically it borrows from bygone cults of Demeter and other antique goddesses, if not even older things. So anyways, the book is called Forests of the Afterlife, Kozeman. Google it. You can even buy it from Amazon.com.
I'm on Amazon right now. I might buy a copy. This is awesome.
I mean, it's a book, but it's one of those things that I keep doing in behind the scenes. Like every couple of years, I try to like publish one work of like OG, no frills, new documentation, novel research, history, and visual history project. So that's one of those.
I love your documentation stuff. Yeah, like because like you had like a Tumblr that was like your inspirations, and it would be like photographs and works of art and very unique. And like I think there was one. It was like a porno or something with a spider woman. Do you remember this?
How can I forget? Yes. Look.
Yes, in the costume. Miles, I know this sounds really weird, but the costume they chose for the spider woman in the porn is like the most like, I don't know, it's like really crazy. It's crazier than something I'd seen like a horror movie. Very, I don't know, it's hard to even describe.
Yo, look, so like spiders and sibaritic women are two of my favorite things on this God-given world. And the thing I remember very distinctly, it's got like, so actually it's like a pretty good work of real life special effects too. So
yeah,
it's shaped like an upside down pitcher plant, but it's the color of flesh, and it's like a hood. So the actress wears it over her head, and there's like eight dark golf ball eyes poking out. And then there are fangs, and then the hood extends along the back into fake legs. And it was, no, spiders don't mate that way. But it was, very creative, very creative.
Yeah. Have you read the saga, the comic series saga?
No. Okay. What happened?
Well, there's a guy who has sex with a spider woman in saga. And while they're doing it, she asks him to stick it in her spinneret.
So
Feel good? Would it feel bad?
She seemed to like it. It's a very popular comic series, actually.
What is it called, sir?
Saga. It's one of the best-selling American indie comics.
So
Google Saga Spider Woman.
Spider Woman.
Spider Lady. Spider Lady. She has like no arms. Yeah, she's crazy looking.
To extend the arachnid veracity, does she also ask him to fist her? Because that's how actually reproduce.
They got they have the little pom poms.
Yeah, and the hand pom poms, pedipalp things. They actually like charge them up from down below, but it's like it's such a like staple part of arachnid evolution that there are no lineages that don't have it, and they literally do the fisting deed. And that's how they're like, yes, that's how they roll.
A lot of weird shit, man.
I love having Kozeman on.
I was walking by the river with Anna the other day because we have the big river up here and all the gardener snakes were out, you know? And so there's a lot of them. She's kind of freaking out. And they were like doing that thing where they ball up with each other, you know? And she's like, I hate that. Why do they do that? And so I've been showing her videos and stuff of the different snakes. You know, some of them have like their little vestigial legs. They're kind of like ticklers that they do.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny because they're like, this used to be my leg, and now it's like a minor sex tickler.
Oh.
Pretty strange.
Oh. I mean, these evolutionary remnants, they're really nice. Like, when you see them in real life animals, so like all the lewd jokes aside, when you see them in real life animals and you just try to imagine how it would be like as a human to have them, that makes writing science fiction all so much easier. I mean, you could look at claspers in sharks, remnant legs in snakes, like even the Jacobson's organ. I mean, like the smell organs and everything. Like, and if you just like port that to a human thing, you just take care of like 70% of all your creative writing tasks for creating believable but weird body horror. So, yeah.
Vestigial stuff is so interesting, too, because, you know, like 10, 12 years ago when everyone was wanting to debate creationists online, it was always like, well, what do you guys say about this?
Like, yeah.
Like how does your shit work with something? Whales having little tiny legs stuck in their fat that they don't use? They're like, oh, well, who knows? One of God's mysteries.
Like, okay. Yeah, and one of the most common retorts was, you just don't know it yet, but maybe it's useful for something.
Maybe it's unfalsifiable argument. You can't really do anything with that. You know?
Oh, but do you know the actual like golden bullet that creationists use in my part of the world? And it's still a little weird. Why does the moon fit so snugly over the sun during an eclipse?
That's awesome. That's beautiful. That's
but beautiful. It's really weird. It's a like really bizarre coincidence. And they used to say that, and like you can't really explain that. You know, you say, oh, maybe we, and then they get quicker over you and then they prevail. But I guess it's no use and it's no fun debating creationists anymore, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of, they don't have anything new to say, you know, so it's kind of like, yeah, whatever.
But
we had it out with them.
So. Yeah, yeah. I don't want to dox you, but did any of you see the eclipse, by the way?
So
I did. I saw some of it.
I live in a land of clouds.
Oh, yeah. Because you could have gotten a partial, right,
Miles? Yeah, I would have got a pretty damn good one. It wouldn't have been a total, but pretty damn good. But instead, it was perfectly gray and cloudy.
Oh. I was on a road trip for doing research for my next video, and I was really, really close to getting the totality, but I think me and my dad, we recorded what we recorded, and I was just, like, too tired. I was, like, too sleep. I was like, I just want to go home. Because I've seen one before. I saw the one in 2018.
Where was that?
That one was also, like, sort of similar place in, like, the east coast of America. And I got to see the totality there. That was really, really cool.
Oh, did you get to see the almost like comically bad newgrounds.com Photoshop brush crescent 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 effect out of the trees?
Freaking oh yes, crap. yes. That's cool. I like that. I did get to see that stuff.
It really looks like somebody used a bad Photoshop brush with the Dodge toolbar. That's how that thing rolls. It's amazing.
So I have a few questions for you guys.
Yes.
Have you ever walked out of a mall into a huge parking lot and forgot where you parked?
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever gone mountain biking, Trey?
Wait, Miles, what's a mall?
Could have reminded for the kids. They were these places you used to go in the 90s. How much money would it take you to spend a night in a cemetery?
Zero.
I've done it.
Do you believe in the power of a curse?
No. I might actually, but not with cemeteries.
What is the tallest man you've ever seen?
I've seen the tallest man in the world because he lives in Turkey. He's either Azeri or Turkish. He's the guy who has to walk with crutches. And he's really gigantic. I've seen him in an airport.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
What's his name?
Yeah, we can't. You can't beat him, Miles. Like Kozma's got like the ace in the hole right there.
I have seen the talisman. Do you like to go wandering beneath a clear blue sky, Trey?
Oh, of course. I love that stuff. Yes.
What really happened here? Who was the cowboy who confronted Johnny and Larry that night? Was the old woman in on it too? Could Danny have been hallucinating? But if Dan was hallucinating, who ate Hal's food? What about the mysterious behavior of the barbecue lid? Was it really the nanny? Does this story seem possible? Was the morgue attendant in on the deception too? Were there gases trapped within the milk bucket that caused the activity? How was the doctor able to send email without a computer.
Was the sewing machine taken over by the spirit of Byron's grandmother?
Could a plant really identify a murderer?
Is it possible that a parrot could give a young girl the will to live? Was the sister's husband really the victim of amnesia? But then how do you explain the bullet hole in his phone? Is this story true? Can a fertilized octopus egg ingested into the human system actually grow inside the body? Do you believe this story?
That's what I love about Europe, is that you're able to wander. In America, you really can't wander.
You
can trouble.
Wander, Trey.
You can get in trouble. In the South, people will shoot you, Miles, if you wander on the
property. We have national parks, man.
Yeah, but it's not the same. It's not the same.
That's okay. Cool. You get to sit in a car and drive.
That's true. It was the interstate highway system, bro.
That's true. I unironically like that experience. Like, when I was in the States, back when my currency could afford the dollar, now it's all fucked, I can't. But when I was there, like, first thing I did after landing, rent the cheapest car. And I kid you not, maybe you laugh at me, but I would drive to Walmart, not even Target, Walmart. Just look at
not even Target.
Just look at the shit. Cheese balls, bags of meat.
Yeah, it's America, baby.
EB bullets. I just look, you know, it's just... It's a weird experience. I guess after two years of living there, you're allowed to be ironic about it. But like when you drop in for a visit, like, you know, once every while in your life, whoa.
Yeah,
it's crazy. You're right. We take it for granted.
It'd be a decent place if we had healthcare.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. In that front, yeah, everywhere else has you totaled. I'm really sorry. Like,
yeah, it's like the one that we just can't do it. Apparently, it doesn't matter what happens.
Doesn't work, Miles. It doesn't work.
Yeah. I was trying to get into my story, Trey.
Yeah, tell me your story, Miles. Sorry. Your story has like been pushed for like weeks and weeks and
this
weeks
is true.
By me.
So I asked you all these questions because I'm doing a story about a show called Beyond Belief: Fact or Fiction, which was a show in the early '90s, which would often start with Jonathan Franks, who you probably know as Riker. The number one in Star Trek The Next Generation. He would walk out on set and show you an optical illusion. He'd be like, oh, look at this picture. Does this picture look like an old woman or a young woman? Wow, who knows? So obviously truth has two sides. And then he would ask you a question about a mountain bike or if you like pie or whatever. And then they'd lead into some story. The show would play about five different episodes, right? Mm-hmm. And they were shot on film, actually, which is kind of nice to watch in retrospect. They'd have like theater actors and a bunch of newcomers. Although there are some people in the show that end up being in stuff, like the guy who plays Roy in The Office was in one episode. And he's like followed by like he's supposed to be like a Native American spirit guy who follows them on a highway. But I think the guy was Italian. Yeah, he got my mistake. So each episode, like they would do five of them. And each one would be like a little parable or a folktale or a supernatural event, right? There's lots of like destiny and spooky stories. A lot of times, like, it's somebody who's dead, right? That's like the twist in like 70% of the episodes. And at the end, you know, Riker would come out and he'd be like, wow, look, those stories, they were so weird. I wonder if you can guess which ones are true and which ones aren't true, right?
Quick editor's note, our dear friend Trey, his audio seemed to be lost here. I can't find it, so you can imagine him laughing and responding to me with silly comments, and just use your imagination for what he said for the next, like, 3 minutes. Sorry.
For example, Trey, here's one of the stories, right? A milkman would go to this little farm every week, right? One time he didn't come, and the milk can was left there. The milk can started shaking and jumping around like it was haunted. And the people didn't know what to do. And it like went in their living room and like attacked them. And they're like, oh, God, what the heck? And so they ran away and they ran over to the milkman delivery guy's house. And they saw his truck. And he like had a heart attack. And because of the milk can freaking out on them, they were able to get him medical help and save his life. Now, do you think the story was real or not? No, it's real, Trey. This is where Trey guesses that the haunted milk can story was false. And is absolutely flabbergasted to find out that it was true.
Yeah, that's the show. They say something like that. They're like, can you guess if this is a real fake? Well, I'm like, I assume the milk can didn't move by itself. They're like, no, you're wrong. This is true.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have one, there's a guy, and he's a dorky guy. He gets beat up in the park, and they steal his clothes for some reason. And then later on, they have to, he comes back, and he, for some reason, had to wear, like, a superhero outfit, because he had to get, like, a Halloween costume or something, because he didn't have any other clothes. And then the guys try to jump him again, but he beats him up because he's wearing superhero clothes, and he beats up, like, five guys.
Fake.
And they're like, true. It was true. It happened.
It has like hero's journey written all over it, but yeah, maybe.
And since I'm the narrator, this is when Trey says, Miles, what is this show? And they have one episode where this kid's like a little dorky kid. He's like eight. And he's like, I don't want to go in my closet. There's monsters in my closet. And his sister and his mom, and his older brother's like, fuck you, kid. You know, toughen up. And his brother's making fun of him. They're chasing him. And then, like, his brother and all of his friends chase him upstairs, and they go to the closet, and they're like, oh, kid, get in the closet. You're a wimp. And he's like, no, I'm not. So his older brother gets into the closet, and they're like, he can handle it in there. I'll prove there's no monsters. And then they open the door, and he's fucking gone.
And then Trey says, what do you mean he can't just be gone? That doesn't make any sense.
Doom, repercussions of evil. No, John Stalwart, you are the demons.
Yeah, and the story was true.
Oh.
Well, hold on. It's true. Now, one of these I was watching and actually recognized. Hold on one sec. What's this problem? Trey is having problems. Participant failed, blah, blah, blah. Failure reason, error. Media recorder is not working as expected. I think you're probably fine.
It was not fine. Anyways, thanks for listening, everybody. Sorry about the technical difficulties. I'm trying to fix them. Just imagine Trey getting really mad at how stupid all these stories are when I tell them the truth. And being all indignant, because that's the way he was. Okay, back to the show where the part where it actually worked.
Anyway, so one, I was watching these with Anna, and one of these I actually noticed was like a real story, a story that I had heard before. And they call it The Scoop. And it's basically in 1883, a reporter has a dream. They describe it. It's actually kind of more like he wrote a novel or a long fiction piece. And it's about a man who kind of predicted the Titanic. He wrote a story about a ship called the Titan, like hitting an iceberg. And it was like, yeah, so they had that one in there. I was like, oh, shit, that one's actually real, kind of. I mean, they, like, do the, like, woo version and make it seem like you knew more than you knew. But, you know, like, the guy did write a book about the Titan crashing with an iceberg and stuff. So that's kind of real. And so I was trying to figure out, well, okay, so since one of these are actually real and aren't just, like, ghost melt cans and evil closet stuff, like, some of these are sourced. And so I looked into this guy, and the guy's name, who is the source for pretty much every single story on the show, his name is Robert Trailins. Now, let me show you a cover of one of his first sci-fi books. I just put it in the chat on the right here.
Let me see this.
Yep, just looking at it.
Oh, that's a cover right there. That's a cover.
Yeah.
Is that him? Is that what he looks like?
No, nobody looks like that. Maybe one of Cosman's stories.
Oh, no. When is a man not a man? When his mind and body have been invaded by the cosmozoids. For 60 cents, you could have gotten this book.
Now,
cosmozoids. Album.
Looks more like a music album. I mean, I can hear the surf rock already. I can hear the surf rock already.
Yeah, it does seem like surf rock sci-fi. I think that's a good point. So here's another book that he wrote. I put it in chat, so...
Okay. Wow. Whoa. Whoa, boy.
Yeah. What's this one called, Trey?
It's called The Black Stud, and it's not about a horse.
Oh. No, it's not. So he wrote a bunch of erotica. In fact, he ghost wrote this book that was called Pleasure is My Business. That was the complete and uninhibited and uncensored story of a sex worker, right? Uh-huh. It was kind of like the utterly rank story of a woman who made sex pay and pay pleasure and enjoyed every minute of it. And actually, this book is somewhat notable legally because it was sued by the state of Florida for obscenity and went to their Supreme Court on First Amendment issues, which is interesting. What's that, Coz?
This guy looks like a product of the 70s. I mean, the famous dinosaur guy, Don Glut, has similar vibes. So, like, complete unashamed and perhaps, like, some gung-ho ownership and enjoyment of male sexuality. I don't know.
Yeah, he got some things going on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? I mean, like, here's an example. Here, tell me what you think of this cover, Cosman.
Okay, just looking at it now. Okay, just wait for the ring a ding UFO. Can I read the blurb too?
Yeah, you're good. You're good.
So we are looking at some, 1970s equivalent of an e-girl, blonde, dressed in a tight pink suit, skin tight, and she's wrapped in like the thinnest bit of twine. And then it says, the miss from SIS. If the UFOs don't get you, bam, this book will. It's Lee Crosley, the miss from SIS, back at the old danger game, whatever that is, tied up, drugged, beaten, harder daddy, no, by whom, but ever undaunted. So, yeah. I guess the guy was appealing to a niche market of masochists.
There's a lot of he wrote a lot of like black stuff, like stuff that's just like a like and that's like in the title, like the black pirate.
It's a lot of interracial erotica.
Yeah. Oh. Black roots.
So, you know, I haven't read it, but you know, I'm suspicious of its problematic nature. To say that.
Slave King.
Yeah, you know, like that, you know. Probably not.
One of them, the tagline for the, what is it, the Black Stud was, what does it say? It says, he ruled slaves with a lash and his mistress with desire. Whoa.
How do you rule someone with desire?
Hot and unbothered with that tagline.
Well, you got to read to find out, buddy.
Okay, so this is the guy that is the source for all these stories.
As far as I can tell, he's the source for every single story in this show. Is this guy?
That's weird. That's odd.
Okay. So I was researching him and going through like newspaper clippings, right? And I found that in 1964, I found this newspaper article that he was promoting a class, kind of like pay for my class, where he could help you learn Morse code in just 24 minutes. Mm-hmm. And remember as many as 100 facts in perfect order, and you could repeat them backwards and forwards. And if you took his class, you'd be able to offer any readings of a magazine or a book. You'd be able to know every single page by memory.
That doesn't make any sense.
I mean, look, this is YouTube before there was YouTube. I mean, now these things also exist, but they're YouTube videos with 328 views.
That's true. It's true.
The article also mentions the news reporter asked him, it's like, they asked him if he'd want to go like explain his method of how he can do these amazing things. And it's quoted as, Trailins doesn't like to go too deeply into detail when asked when to explain his method. But he said that he learned this while doing research on a 120-year-old method. And you can take his class, which is 10 weeks for $115 in 1964 money.
Okay. So there's like an angle with this.
It's just like, you know, Trivium, the basics of foundations of writing. Get the course now. Now back at why the Western civilization is dying again. Like, same shtick.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. So in 1966, he wrote Strange Events Beyond Human Understanding. And this is the main source document for a Beyond Belief Factor Fiction. The vast majority of the stories come from this. It is basically a collection of folk tales or things he heard that a guy heard that a guy heard that a guy told him. Or sometimes they are things that have at least one newspaper clipping, right? But some of the things are quite strange. For example, there's a story in there of a myth of a man in 1800s America, like a wealthy plantation owner, right? And his wife dies and they bury her and put her in a nice wooden coffin. And when they're burying her, she actually like comes back to life after he puts fresh flowers on her tomb and is fine and everything's fine. And then they're like, and that woman's name? She was the mom of Robert E. Lee.
What?
Oh.
You're like, what?
What does that even mean, though? Like,
I don't know. Like, one of them, dude, is literally like, this is a kid, and he has a dog, and it's a good dog. Oh, no, the dog runs in the road, and he died, and everyone's sad, and then they bury him. And then the kid wakes up at night, and the dog is, like, scratching at his door, and is still alive. And they go, wow, that's amazing. And then the episode literally just ends.
That's Pet Sematary.
Yeah. Yeah, but Pet Sematary, something else also happens. It's just like, oh, it's alive. It's the end.
Miles, there was a show when I would see, like, I think I might have been a little too young to watch this show.
Yeah, because this is 90s.
But this is there was a Ripley's Believe It or Not TV show, if you ever watched that.
Yeah, I've seen every
episode. That was early 2000s, and it was kind of like the same thing. And there's one episode that really stuck out to me where the host is talking about like this one serial killer in like Germany or something like that, and then they said that like they executed him, and then they did an autopsy on his body, and he pulls out like this like leather, like it's like a head. And it's been bisected. Mm-hmm. He opens it up and he's like, and there was no brain inside. And then that's just how the episode ends. And I'm like, what? And I've like been trying to find out. And I don't think that's real at all. I'm like, how? Wait a second. How could a human exist, like, function without a brain? That doesn't make any sense.
There are empty inside his head. There are a few medical reports that I read in these books about medical anomalies where sometimes the brain tissue doesn't develop and the person still has a, like, they're a little slow, but they're up and alive. I mean, unless these are fake or something else, I don't know. But there are a few recorded cases, like, I'll need to do a Google deep dive to, like, be clear about them. But there are a few cases where, like, the head is full of cerebrospinal fluid and the brain above the reptile level, basically. It's just atrophied, but somehow the person has had a relatively normal life, or I don't know. Or like,
yeah, I've known a few people like that.
You know a few people
like that? Yeah, yeah, I know. I've seen them.
They run our government.
A long time with like a huge invasive brain tumor that they never noticed, and like it's a really plastic organ. But I don't think, I don't think that was the case with your German murderer.
Yeah, yeah, like it was just like where his like his skull was just empty. Like, is that what they show in the episode? And I don't think that's true.
Do you think the implication
like there was just a gaping hole? His brain should have been like it was an empty cavity, and I was like, that doesn't make any sense.
Do you think in my research, when I was trying to find a lot of these newspaper stuff, sourcing these stories, I actually found someone else who was doing the same shit I was doing. And there's an article on medium.com called Trying My Best to Source Beyond Belief Fact or Fiction Stories. so I definitely recommend that article. It had a lot of the, it was like honing in on the same stuff I was doing, but I think she was working on it for a while. Cause like some of these, like there's a newspaper clipping that kind of suggests that it happened, but like, you're like, what do you mean it happened? You know, there's like a fucking psychic horse that like they put up little letters and it could like, it would hit the letters down with its nose, tell you like who the true killer was and stuff. Or like there's another one where like a plant was a witness to a murder.
What do you mean? What do you mean it's plant witness to murder?
This one was true. They said at the end of the episode that it's true. You think our writers made it up? False.
What?
I've read this.
So, yeah,
what do you mean by that? What does that mean though? Miles?
That's what I always say. Well, I'm always watching these at like 1 o'clock trying to go to bed with Anna, and then they're like, this is true. And I'm like, what the fuck do you mean it's what true? What do you mean it's true? Like there's ramifications for saying this.
It's kind because I've done that with Carl Pilkington stories on like Ricky Gervais show where like I'd be like, where did Carl even get this story from? And like we're like, cause like, that's the thing with Carl, like whenever he retells a story, it's like 85% of it's wrong, but there's like, you'll find it and be like, oh, there's actually like a little grain of truth there. Like with some of his monkey news, but other ones are just like literally just made up stories.
Yeah. So there was a guy in the late '60s working for the FBI who believed, you know, there's a lot of woo in the '70s. So he was kind of early on to it to like, plant psychosis. I mean, the first episode of In Search of, the Leonard Nimoy show, right? One of the most prominent like woo shows in American history, was about like psychic plants. So like this was an idea that was part of like the New Age movement. And so he basically hooked a polygraph detector up to a plant. And then they brought in a bunch of, you know, like
what?
The usual suspects. I don't know where they got these people. People that could have been the killer, right? Of this guy who owned the plant shop. And then like the plant didn't react. Like, oh, it couldn't do anything. But then the kid who was the helper was like the nephew helper kid. He came in and then the plant started freaking out in the polygraph test. Like, oh my God, he's the killer.
Was that admissible in court?
I don't know.
Variety of the story. I know a variety of the story. And as you said, it's part of this whole like 1970s new age. Who can oscilloscope to a plant kind of story where if there are two plants in a room and you go and like you really like cut one up and like destroy it, and then later they hook an oscilloscope at the other plant, and then if the same person walks in that room again, the other plant, the witness, it screams. And
yeah.
Oh my there you gosh. Go. That's scary.
There's actually a documentary about like a quote unquote documentary made in the 70s about that. And like, I don't know, they were into some like a lot of weird Age of Aquarius shit. And also like as a caveat, I think with all of these stories, like, I mean, you sterling job trying to track them down and everything. But all I'll say is if you think you have fake news now, you know, there used to be entire professions called, they would call them rewrite men, actually. The entire profession in the journalistic industry about basically exaggerating claims and, you know, just making shit up because who's going to believe you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's nothing new, man.
Well, our last episode was basically about that.
So do you want to hear what happened to the kid in the closet?
Yeah, what happened to the kid in the closet? Yeah, yeah, because that's like one where like a person disappeared, and that's got to be like ends up in like police reports and stuff.
So in the episode, the kid goes in the closet. They open the closet. The kid's not in there. Everybody freaks out, starts looking for him. Right? They call the police. The police come in. They check it all. They look for like, you know, oh, there's a hole or anything. What happened? Couldn't find the kid. And the episode ends with fucking kid gone. And you know, you're like 9 in 1996 watching this. You're like, holy fuck.
This is going to happen to me.
Holy fuck, I know this is going to happen to me. Or I could make this happen to someone else. And so the problem is, this is a real story. What really happened is the kid did disappear in the closet. It did happen. And they couldn't figure out why, because it looked like there was no like hole or way out there. There was actually like a crawl space hole, right? But the kid was smart. And he clogged up the crawl space hole with some wood after he went under it. So it wasn't apparent for the police who were looking for it. They didn't see it. And the kid went and was living at his friend's house, like in their basement, not basement, their attic, for like 2 weeks, just hanging out, drinking Yoo-Hoos and playing Game Boy or whatever he was doing. And then eventually they found the kid 2 weeks later. But the best information is not in the episode.
Well, yeah, because that's kind of relevant to the story that they did find him eventually.
Yeah,
like he didn't just disappear out into thin air and was never seen again. They lied to you. That's not lying. I guess it's they removed details from the story. It's an incomplete story.
They say
a white lie
that
lying by omission.
It was just a timing issue. They didn't have the information of him being found early enough. I don't really believe that because it doesn't take 2 weeks to make the TV show. Like, I mean. Whatever.
Damn.
Well, so that's the show. I just thought it was interesting, this history of all these folk telling like stories, because these stories pop up sometimes. They mention other things sometimes. You hear them on Reddit or these spooky podcasts, which are like the antithesis of our show, where they just like tell people stupid bullshit ghost stories. People go, wow, man, that's real, you know. Like, that's basically what the show was. But the guy who wrote it is just so interesting because he wrote all these weird ass books, tried to sell memory courses, and sold a bunch of porn.
I really like that, like tracking that. I'm a sucker for like trying to find the primary source with like stories like this. Like, I actually really like that you went through this show and tried to go through all their check all their stories, because that's hard. It's really hard to do.
It is hard, especially because Google is getting less and less useful day by day.
Oh yeah,
as Web 2.0 degenerates. A lot of
stuff isn't digitized to begin with. Especially local news and stuff.
Well, I don't know how to use microfiche. So. So
my like next video is kind of about this, where I've been like contacting like local historical societies in like these small towns, and they have to like scan in their own newspapers for me and stuff like that, and like books and birth records. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is such a pain. Because you're right, it hasn't been digitized.
What it's going to be about, or is it a secret?
It's about, so like I have like multiple projects working at the same time, but like that one is about, it's about like a particular event that happened before the Civil War that not too many people know about. Uh-huh. And I'm trying to find like where a guy wrote his memoir, like a decade later about the event and claims he was there. And I'm trying to figure out like if he actually was there, and I've actually found like a lot of evidence to support that. No, he actually probably was there, because he knows details of information that is like so obscure that I'm like, no, he was there. Like he had to have been there. So yeah. I'm keeping it secret.
Oh, that sounds like a good one, buddy.
Thank you. It has to do with
praise you. I really have to praise you on that too. Like your last video on Bigfoot, forget Bigfoot, forget skepticism. Like, you did more than I think the entire tertiary education industry in the United States combined to teach young people how to do research and how to synthesize information. I think like that's your killer strength there.
Thank you. I mean, that's like the crazy thing is like now, like, because I used to, a lot of my videos in the past were like kind of like regurgitating information. Like I would read a whole bunch of books and then kind of like, convey what other people have done research for. But now I'm like, you can just like interview people, like email them, and they'll give you like new information. Like it's information that like has not really existed before, and you can present that like your own research.
It's something really we talked about a bit on the show before, because like I had that book, right? About the hairy man being bullshit and everything. But Trey just put it together in such a fantastic way, you know.
And you're also data scientist too. Like you have all these tables, and like you did like claim by claim, and like breakdowns and data visualization. It's like fantastic stuff. And you break it down so like succinctly and simply. Like it's like a, I mean, they should award you an honorary PhD just for that.
thank you. I've thought of it, like people talking about like where, like especially the Bigfoot video, like they could, like you could have turned that into like a publication, like a paper for a journal or something like that. It's like because I have friends.
You got more access this way. Who reads
those? That's the thing is like I could do that, but more people actually see it through this method, because I have friends that are getting their PhDs or something like that. I didn't go to grad school. I still haven't. I'm just doing YouTube, and like it's like the new way to kind of publish your research, because more people are going to watch it. But yeah, thank you. Yeah. It's fun. I don't know. I find it really fun trying to track things down, and like, because I have a tendency to be like, no, that's like somebody just made that up. But in it, I am like, I can't say that until I can prove it, you know?
Well, it also worked really good because we had the source document, right?
Like
the thing that she was quoting doesn't say what she says it says.
Right.
And we have that. So like it kind of shows.
You can interview people that are still like alive, and they'll talk to you and give you their side. That's like an amazing thing. That's like the great part about the internet to me, is you can just email people and they'll respond. Not always, but sometimes they'll surprise you and you're like, wow. That's
also crazy. In your own way, you're helping protect a bit of Native American culture, at least the way that it's seen through the.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's surprising. Yeah,
this next video.
Sorry,
you go.
It's surprising how a lot of people are like scared to email people about niche issues. And I guess we can all say it out here that there's nothing to be afraid of. Like, especially some younger people, they got this real like zoomer angst. Like, oh, what if they don't respond? Oh, what if they think I'm
well.
Yeah. What would you say to such people?
I say do it. Like it's fine. Like because you might offend somebody, like I don't know, with asking questions, and they just won't respond to you. But you won't know until you've tried. And it's, I don't know, it's good to, like, for me, it's good just to like exhaust all your options, get as much information as you can. Even if they don't necessarily answer your question, you can get like partial information. Because it kind of relates to like offended, like, for this video, it's like a guy who was in like a gang before the Civil War, and he did like some really bad stuff. he participated in some pretty heinous stuff in the West. But he survived. He survived it, and he became like the mayor of like this small town in Texas. And I emailed the small town, the city, and I was like, "Hey, like, I'm trying to find information about this guy. He was like your mayor in like 1880 or something like that." Like, and they're like, "Why are you asking about him?" And it's like, "Well, it's associated with his early career before he showed up in the town." And I'm like, "I know that that might offend them, or they might not like that information being dug up, because that's like a famous person in their town's history." But it's like, yeah, it's worth asking, you know.
It's like that Simpsons episode where the town's founder Jebediah Springfield was a bloody pirate. And
yes,
you remember that one?
Yes, yeah.
And then you at the end also get to say, "But the myth of Jebediah has value too." I should never
forget. Used to be a good show, that Simpsons.
But anyways, in a roundabout way, Miles, I commend you for your story, because I like that story. Because I did that with, I've been toying with an idea for Carl Pilkington's Monkey News, like the origins of all these monkeys.
It's just interesting. You hear all these folk tales, and you're like, where are the fucking people getting these? And they're not nowhere most of the time. Right? Yeah, they're not nowhere.
There's typically like a kernel of truth, and it's probably really far from what they've said, but they're typically not made out of whole cloth. Sometimes they are, but typically they're not like just completely 100% made up. There's good details wrong.
Like I said, in the Titanic one is kind of true. Like they you know, juice it up a bit, but it's kind of true.
Like, I'm trying to think, with history stuff, you always have that too, where you're like, you'll see like a meme on like one of those big history Twitter accounts that say like, "Did you know that the Egyptian word for cat actually means meow," or something like that. Oh. That's not true. That's not true. That's like somebody made that up for a joke and stuff. And then you actually like take your time to go back. You're like, "Wait a second, that actually is real." You're like, "Wait, that's legit." Like, Egyptian is onomatopoeic. Like the word for cat is onomatopoeic, and the word for donkey is onomatopoeic, which is kind of funny.
Well, you know, we call oranges oranges.
That's right. That's right. So I don't know. Like, I'm so used to, there's so many like just so stories, you know, Miles, that just like, they sound too good to be true. And then and it's always fun to actually, it turns out they are true. It's few and far between, but it's always fun to see that.
So, also, it's a fun show. If anybody wants some 90s kitsch supernatural stuff, it's on Amazon Prime. I recommend it, but it will make you mad sometimes if you're a materialist. So
X-Files makes me mad sometimes.
But X-Files has great sexual chemistry.
I've been following your X-Files fan posting. It's amazing.
Oh, yes. It's fun. I fell off a little bit. I watched an episode last night after a little break. I watched it with my dad. I watched Miles, you know what I'm talking about, like the episode that shows like the background of the Smoking Man.
Oh yeah, yeah, when he talks about fixing the Buffalo Bills Super Bowls.
Yes, and yes, he does say that, but also like JFK assassination and stuff. And like, I had to get in like a argument with my dad, because my dad is like, he thinks JFK was like assassinated by, like, he believes in like second shooter stuff. He doesn't think Lee Harvey Oswald did it.
Magic bullet.
And I was like, "Dad, come on! You're smarter than this. You're smarter than this."
It's the most believed conspiracy, like major conspiracy theory, in America.
Maybe.
And it's a shame because it's a shame that like in the 90s, like conspiracy theories like felt kind of harmless. At least that's kind of the vibe I get. I wasn't alive then, but now conspiracy theories are pretty harmful, right?
I think they were always harmful.
They're always
It's a little worse when, and I'm not saying this to be like glib or political, but like, I think it's objectionably true that you have like a fascist movement growing in America. Yeah. And fascism really needs like shared truths to be broken down. It's like an important part of fascism. So it's especially dangerous currently now. Mm. So not good. Not too great.
Sorry, Kuzma, I talked over you.
No. I was just going to like relate to maybe the second after Lady Diana's death. That's like really universally accepted over this
time. Oh, yeah, but
Atlantic. But
that's what my mom believes in, which is crazy. My mom's like, oh yeah, the queen killed Princess Diana. I was like, mom.
They even hint at it in that recent The Crown show.
Yes, they do.
That sucks.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's conspiracy theories. Everybody loves conspiracy theories.
I guess the 9/11 conspiracy is pretty big in America.
Oh, that's pretty big. Yeah, my dad kind of. I had a conversation with my dad about it, and I was like explaining to him. I was showing him diagrams that people made. Like, yeah, actually, it makes sense how the buildings. Like, my dad's like, why did the buildings fall directly on top of each other or something like that? Like,
what
straight
about
down?
Building
like,
did seven, it topple Trey? Over? What about Building 7?
Oh, Building 7. Shoot, I forgot about Building 7.
If you're looking for a really good skeptical explanation and contradiction to all these conspiracy posts about it, Miles Powers on YouTube has a really good video series interviewing and breaking down a lot of these arguments. So I highly recommend that if you're interested why this is all a bunch of bullshit.
I think, for conspiracies, I think the herd instinct comes first. I mean, they're willing to latch on to anything. So paradoxically, and maybe sadly, it feels like no matter how much you try to argue reason into these guys, and like over in my part of the world, there are some really bad endemic conspiracy theories too. And no matter how much you want to argue, they just want like a symbol to rally around. So Can you even... I think mockery is the best way to combat this, not outright.
A lot of times. Yeah. And it's, the internet's kind of like against mockery on issues nowadays, but I think sometimes it is a useful tool, actually, when something's just so absurd and so beyond reason and like you're just not willing to be engaged with, you know, just making fun of it can be an actual useful tool. But I think a lot of these conspiracy theories, it's when it's like big political or like national identity issues, people don't like the simple explanations because they don't seem to make sense, right? Like just some random guy who wasn't even that like political or motivated, like he killed Kennedy, or like you know, like the end of history peace that America had was like destroyed by like these like Muslim extremists that were also like actually pretty wealthy and educated, that they like stole some planes and crashed them in the towers. Like, what the fuck, why, you know? And so it's so, like it can't be that, it must be bigger than that.
It must have order. It must have a reason.
Yeah. So it just gets, people need it to be in line with something they already understand, you know? So
I mean, also the response to 9/11, like in the invasion of Iraq and like the destruction of an entire part of the world, it was so out of balance that, you know, people want to believe it was part of a bigger plan because then there's no justifying that. So that also doesn't help.
Well, anyway, do you have a story, Trey?
I can briefly mention the Pompeii paintings.
Okay, what do you got to tell us about Pompeii?
Not too much. It's just like a recent story where they're excavating, they unveiled an excavation in Pompeii, and they found a couple more really nice frescoes.
I think new doggo, right? Like, new cute dog.
Yes, there's a dog. Yeah, like there's three, I think they published three scenes. And one is like Paris from like the Trojan War. And there's like a really kind of goofy Marmaduke looking dog next to him that looks all uncomfortable. It's like Paris, I think it's like Paris choosing who's like the most beautiful woman, if you know like Trojan War stuff, like the whole reason for the war starting. And there's like a dog, a little yellow dog in the background, like making a very goofy face.
And sad, cute.
Here, Miles, I'll put it here.
I've seen them.
Oh, you see them? Yeah, they're cool, and they're very vibrant colors. Like I don't know, like you don't see the thing is like a lot of the paintings that you see. Because I visited Pompeii, I got lost in Pompeii. I lost my tour group in Pompeii this summer.
Oh no.
And they abandoned me because they're walking, Miles, I don't know if I talked about this on the show. They were walking by the House of the Faun, which is a very, very famous building in Pompeii because it has the Alexander mosaic in it.
Yeah.
Which, of course, I got to hit that up.
That's your boy.
It's the most famous image of Alexander because it's like during the battle, it's like him looking at Darius III in like the battle. It's a very gorgeous mosaic. It's like considered like one of like the most beautiful, elaborate paintings that survived the ancient world because it uses a lot of fun perspective and stuff. Anyways, I peeled off because they were going to walk right by it. My tour group, they're walking right by it. I was like, I got to see the House of the Faun. So I peeled off and I'll be like, I'll catch up with you guys in a second. And then they just disappeared. I lost them for like 2 hours in Pompeii. And I was like wandering around. There's no cell service in Pompeii because it sucks.
Yeah.
And it's a massive site. I didn't realize how massive Pompeii was until I were actually lost in it.
It's a major city, right?
Major city. And then just the site itself is huge because they haven't even really excavated the whole site. But I was like, oh, I'm used to like American historical sites, you know, where it's like, I don't know. It's like a couple, like it's like a block or two or something like that. But Pompeii is huge and like it's hard to walk there because the streets are all messed up because of geology. Anyways,
what am I talking
about? I remember you throwing lots of shade on the tour on Twitter. Like,
I was.
The tour guide sucked and I'm glad I got lost and I was separated from them. And
yes, I'm too. Cause he, I asked my parents like where they were at and he took them to like the theater, like the amphitheater and a couple stuff, but he like blew by most of the really cool stuff. Cause he didn't visit. There's another house that has like a guard dog mosaic on the floor. It's almost like a rug. When you walk in, there's like a mosaic of like a guard dog and it's like, beware the dog or something. Mm-hmm. There's all these like famous little locations in Pompeii that I wanted to hit up, but the tour guide was speed running it.
Had they discovered the Chimkin stand when you were there, or did that come
Chimkin
later?
Chimkin stand.
Yeah, there's like Chimkin a stand. Fast food stand in Pompeii and it had like,
I think it had been
color palette with chickens and stuff. Like if that place was a fast food shop, I would eat there.
Yes, I know what you're talking about because the painting of the food is like really, really gorgeous. Like it looks like Renaissance almost style paintings.
And
I remember there was like a big
appetizing color schemes. Yellow, McDonald's yellow and McDonald's red.
You're right. Oh my gosh, and they got the chicken. My gosh.
McDonald's sucks now, Cozman. You'd be disappointed to hear. They've raised their prices by like 100%.
No. 100%. Over here, it's a luxury now. Over here, it's a luxury.
Damn.
There's like no dollar menu anymore. It's pretty sad.
For this story, I was just like, it's always cool to realize that there's more archaeology to be done because I'm kind of cynical with archaeology sometimes because you're kind of taught in school that all the cool stuff has been found already.
Like in Truman Show. There's nothing else to explore, Truman.
I like to be an explorer. Like the Great Magellan.
Oh, you're too late. There's really nothing left to explore.
Yeah, it's like that. I had a professor that told me kind of like that. Yeah, most of the important stuff's been found already. There's still work to be done. Whenever they put in like a highway, you'll find like a Native American grave or something like that. But the cool stuff's been taken already. And it's cool when you get these stories every now and then that just proves that wrong. Like these are gorgeous frescoes.
Of course there's stuff to be found, you know. Fuck.
Yeah. And after my trip to northern Greece, like there's so much stuff to be found because there's so many tombs just in Vergina that just like haven't been excavated yet, and they're just like it's going to take like 100 years for them to excavate everything.
I mean, it's not the same as like European Greek structures, but like we talked about in the show a while ago, they found that obsidian in one of the Great Lakes that was like from the Washington area that shows there was a trade network Americas between the Great Lakes and the West Coast. You know, I mean, like that's really cool.
Three months ago, they discovered an entire new swathe of civilization under the Amazon. Maybe you guys discussed.
We didn't bring it up yet. I was waiting for more to come out on that. But yeah, I heard about that. It's really amazing.
Yeah, that's another thing. That's on a tangent. I read a book recently about the Amazon and where we get the name Amazon from, and that it literally comes from like conquistadors seeing like giant Amazon women, like a civilization of them. And there's like actual debate that I found historians like if that actually happened, because the details they've given, like there's several conquistadors that give different accounts of it, and they all like talk about these giant warrior women that are like 7 feet tall. So it's like, oh, did it actually happen? That's where you get the name Amazon from.
Yeah, so, I know. Cool.
Because those accounts have been kind of proven correct with the recent discoveries that there were large population centers on the Amazon.
Yeah, it just devours that stuff, you know?
Yeah, and it's just been devoured. So if any civilization did exist, it's probably been consumed. And you're like, oh, dang.
And there's lots of stuff that was coastal that is gone, you know? Mm-hmm. Plus, there's Atlantis, Trey.
Oh, there's Atlantis.
Still have to find Atlantis.
It can't just be like a metaphor.
Well, no, because we have those people that can channel people from Atlantis and speak their language. So
the guy that was like, he was reborn from Atlantis, the guy on Gaia.
Yeah.
I remember Atlantis. He like has his little, he has drawings of what it looked like and stuff because he was a 12-year-old.
So it must be true.
Yeah. Yeah, oh my gosh.
But no, you know what else is looking for stuff that must be true, Trey?
What? Who's this?
Monster Quest.
Monster Quest.
Head start.
Witnesses around the world report seeing monsters. Are they real or imaginary? Science searches for answers. On Monster Quest.
we were talking about it last time I was with you guys. We talked about the giant squid episode. They were the only time they discovered something new.
Yes.
Miles, is it the only time? Was there at least one more?
Well, it depends on what you count, you know?
Like, no, you're right. I don't think there was any. Like, I guess there's been no ones that really stick out to us besides giant squid.
Well,
I guess Trey, like the green. Oh yes.
What are we looking for this time, though, buddy?
This episode's kind of weird, where it's like kind of like a hodgepodge episode where we're looking for a whole bunch of different things that aren't really related. Like there's just a common theme of ocean.
We've gone back to the sea.
This episode's called "Sea Monsters Caught on Camera," and the basic premise is that medieval and Renaissance sea monsters are real. We're looking for them. Because every Monster Quest episode has like the little CGI, like what we're looking for, a little CGI animation roll in. And this one, it's like straight up a medieval sea beast with like tusks and like snout, like what are those things? Like those
fucking pig fucker looking sea monsters.
It's got like a pig face and tusk coming out of its mouth. It looks like a boar with a tail. We're basically looking for that.
There's that. There's the vermicelli sea snake, the one that looks like a gut.
Yeah.
Very famous.
Oh yes, there's sea snake.
And then there's
they basically are like, these things are fucking real, obviously.
Yes. Yeah. Because the thing is, like, the basic premise is like, I did a lot of research for this.
You did more than I did. I did find the primary source, though.
Oh, good. Yeah, you did. You did. I read a book that's called, I'm going to plug it because it was actually a very good book. It's called Sea Monsters, A Voyage Around the World's Most Beguiling Map. It's a 2013 book by Joseph something. It's talking about how medieval and Renaissance maps from like the age of exploration always drew a whole bunch of like weird sea monsters on them in like the 1500s. You've probably seen them. The most famous one is the Carta Marina. And it's like a map of the known world, and of course there's like these sea monsters at the margins. And I kind of went on a tangent with this because there's some kind of really unique ones that we don't really talk about that much. Because there's, of course, like Kraken. Everybody knows like Kraken. But there's also like, I have a list here. There's Xiphias or something like that. Funny enough, it's like sword. It comes from like the Greek sword. So they're kind of like swordfish. And we've retained this for like the scientific name of swordfish now. But it's like an owl sea monster. I can put a little like what the drawing of what it looks like in here.
Joe Nicol would be freaking out.
They're very weird.
This opportunity to plug a great book about this very thing.
Oh yes, for sure.
It's called Sea Monsters on Medieval and Renaissance Maps. I have it as a real book, and it's by Chet Van Duzer, VAN D-U-Z-E-R. And it's like, if any of you listeners are interested in the like deeper history of these things, plus a whole lot of like there are things like winged sea elephants, something that looks like a cactus with eyes, and like a lot of weird stuff. Sea popes.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
I'm looking at the Ziphius in Hortus Sanitatis de Piscibus, which has an owl-like face.
Like, yes, I have the description from like the 1500s here. If you're curious, it's like Ziphius is not is like no other, but in something it is like a whale. He hath as ugly a head as an owl. His mouth is wondrous deep, a vast pit, whereby he terrifies and drives away those that look into it. His eyes are terrible, back wedge fashion and elevated like a sword. His snout is pointed. So it's like a sea owl monster thing. There's all these weird ones.
That's real as shit, right?
Yeah. They're sea swine, Miles. They're sea swine.
Oh, I've seen them.
A monstrous hog. It has a hog's head.
They used that name for beaked whales after it all became.
Yes, sad. Yeah. That's the thing is like, because there's a whole bunch. There's sea serpents, there's sea swines, sea unicorns, and all kinds of weird stuff. But they're probably based on real animals. And you're right that we've retained the name we use for them. We carry the legacy of like the medieval maps in our scientific literature, which is kind of cool. So a lot of them are probably known animals that these artists, and this is a thing here, the artists never saw them, you know, like they were just relaying secondhand information. And so they have really bad drawings.
Couldn't even draw giraffes and elephants and shit. How are they going to draw?
And how do you expect
sea
creatures that people barely see, they just catch glimpses of accurately. And one of them, this is related for this episode, is kind of, so medieval maps would draw whales, and they would, I have a description here. There are many kinds of whales. Some are hairy and some are 4 acres in bigness. Their two dog teeth or tusks are longer than the rest, underneath like a horn, like the teeth of boars or elephants. So this is kind of where we get this, the monster of the episode, where it's like this tusked kind of creature. And it's from medieval maps of whales. So these are supposed to be whales. And it probably comes from, if you ever see like a baleen whale, like what their skeletons look like, they can kind of look like, their lower jaws can look like tusks.
Yeah, so if it's like a corpse, if it's a corpse and the things are like poking through the flesh.
Yeah,
baleen, I think that's what happened here. Looks like hair.
Yeah, and that might be where they get the hair from, like the hairy. Yeah. But for the most part, I think most people understand that these are just bad medieval artists, bad Renaissance artists that were drawing things that they never saw. Like they're drawing them based on just like descriptions that were relayed to them.
I say let them cook. They were coming up with a bunch of cool shit.
Well, one of them that's kind of interesting is polypus. Like it means many feet, many limbs. And if you look at the raw description that they base it off of, it's like it uses a siphon to travel and has many limbs and eats fish and stuff like that. And it's fast. And like the description, actually, you're like, you obviously can tell, oh, that's just an octopus or like a squid. But the drawing, like the medieval artists, like didn't really understand what it was. So they drew it like a giant lobster. Like it's a giant lobster.
Oh, I'm looking at it right now. Yeah. They even have like weird whiskers, like some sort of catfish. Catfish-ass looking mouth, too.
And catfish are delicious.
This is like part catfish, part lobster. I think it's like the most delicious sea monster you never ate.
There's like a lot. And so these maps just have like tons of them. And like, of course, like sea unicorns are probably like narwhals and stuff.
And they have all perspective. I'm really sad that there are no like giant sea mammals with huge eyes, you know, because imagine if sonar did not evolve and some sea mammals took the ichthyosaur route, which famously have really big eyes. Like
imagine something like that evolved. That's all, like, that's a little plausible scientifically, but yeah, I would just love there to be like, I don't know, 6 meter. I don't know how many feet that is. 6 meter.
Well, long. How big is a blue whale eye? I mean, it's not like
30 meters.
Fortunately, I mean, it's pretty big size. It's not like crazy big. But...
No, I would love there to be like big sea mammals with big eyes. That's all I'm saying. Like,
I support you.
Yeah.
Because we have like giant squids. They have giant eyes.
I want it to be
a man. I guess they're not mammals.
Yeah, not mammals.
Yeah, not like an invertebrate. Oh, so yeah, you're right. This is where like the whales and the cetaceans, like their designs aren't not that cool.
Their designs, poor concept art.
Poor concept art with the cetaceans.
It's a major skill issue for evolution. The reason why they bring up all this stuff that I assume most people understand are fictitious accounts of partially seen real creatures.
Yeah.
Probably majority. Some of them are probably just made up or misheard.
They're just bad. They're bad. They're bad drawings is what they are. They're just bad drawings from people that never really saw the things while they were alive. Because they're labeled as whales. Like they're called orcas and whales and stuff. Yeah. And they're obviously supposed to be whales, but like it's somebody like a monk has just seen skeletons, or just is like filling in the details. Cause they give them like dog paws. Like they give whales like lion paws and stuff.
Yeah, these monks don't know nothing. Tusks. They've never even seen a vagina.
Never seen one. They've never seen a vagina. yeah.
But the reason why, and they proc all this stuff, is because they do actually have a bunch of video evidence of what seems to be an unknown creature. Right.
Ooh. Yes.
Which is a lot better than what we normally have, because normally the show doesn't debut. Here's new Bigfoot. Here's new Chupacabra video. Right. It's just a bunch of people saying some shit. But the reason they made this is they have a new video, and this is the Sour Wine monster sighting, where there is a lot of video evidence of a difficult to identify or perhaps unknown animal.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, and it has like a trident tail. They make a big deal of this.
Yeah, and that trident tail, of course, is an unknown feature on any mammal, and is something that is common on a lot of these 16th century drawings. So,
mm-hmm.
They basically do the Monster Quest thing where they ask a bunch of people about it. And so it's basically two Florida guys or fishermen out there, and they've on several different occasions taken video of this thing, and you see it, and it kind of looks confusing. Like, what was your thought seeing this video of this creature kind of come out? You see its back, you do see the trident tail, you can't quite see its face, but you see like 30% of its face in one of the shots.
I remember this video when I was a kid, and it didn't fool me. I found the explanation that is given later. That's pretty. It's a pretty good explanation. Yeah.
I guess we can just get to the punch on it then.
Because that's the thing is it's like a blob going in and out of the water, and it like looks like fatty. It looks like mammalian.
Yeah, it does.
Like I was never fooled that it's like a fish or a shark or anything like that. I was like, serpent. This looks like a mammal. And yeah, especially when the head rears out, the head really gives it away. It's like, oh, okay. Cause the people in the episode go like, there's the explanation that is probably like almost certain the explanation, but they're like, well, it has a slightly different shape.
Oh,
therefore it can't be.
Okay.
Miles, what do you think? What do the experts say about this?
They talked to a few different experts, right? Mm. One of them is like, "Hey, man, who fucking knows what it is? Who knows? You know, keep watching the episode." And then they talked to Lauren Coleman, a not friend of the show, Lauren Coleman, who I've invited on 3 times now.
And he hasn't shown up.
No, he says, "Unfortunately, we're sea monsters. There's not much in the way of tangible evidence." He then brings up a bunch of weird fish stories. Then, so I'm like, all right, thanks, Lauren Coleman. Then they ask this expert, this lady, and she's like, "Well, that's a fucking manatee, obviously." So Thanks for coming and interviewing me about this obvious manatee. And then they ask one guy who they try to treat like he's some kind of zoological expert, but he's actually a cryptozoology guy. And he's like, oh, who, maybe it's not a manatee. Don't look like a manatee to me. I bet you it's this extinct kind of seal that nobody's seen. And it's not.
It's very clear because the explanation they give, because like they pick at the little details where like, oh, the snout looks a little not like a manatee, the eyes are a little far back, and then the tail there's nothing like that. So they find like the smallest details and they pounce on those.
Yeah. So the tail being in this trident shaped is perhaps the hardest to explain if it's a naturally occurring phenomenon. Because the trident tail isn't something that you see on any known mammals, right?
Right.
And it is seen on this medieval art. So that's where they're like, oh, what the hell is this? The thing is, there is an epidemic of boats, because boats have propellers that go down the water and big metal thing that spins. And they often, quite frequently, hit manatees and harm manatees, right?
Mm.
And they often can hit their tail, and their tails are relatively soft, and so they get disfigured. This is such a problem that the show even goes to a place that takes pictures of manatees and chronicles this problem. They do cross-reference this trident tail with the 200 or so photos of damaged manatee tails they have, and they don't find an exact match.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. So they're like, since there's not an exact match, it's perhaps a medieval 16th century monster.
Right. That's the thing, is like they seize on any, that's my problem with Monster Quest sometimes, is they seize on any tiny little bit of doubt, and then they blow it up. And I'm like, no, it's just a manatee that hasn't been recorded in their database yet.
Yeah, which is a pretty obvious.
It's a fine explanation. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, even if you go over to the boys at Cryptozoology on Reddit, who have perhaps a love hate relationship with us, they mostly agree when I was looking it up. Even like a decade ago, they're like, yeah, man, it's a man.
That's the thing, is I was never fooled. Like, even as a little lad, I was never fooled by this episode. Because they go on, they do kind of an interesting thing where they hire Oops Animation Studio or Incorporated. They say both. I think it's Oops
Incorporated. Yeah, I believe this is the company that does all the CG PS2 art for the show.
It looks like it. Yeah, it definitely looks like the same animators.
They made it seem like there was a new place they were going to, but I don't think so. I think
it's like, why would you hire two? You know, like, why would you hire two different animation studios, right? Like, to do, like, because somebody had to do the one earlier in the episode. And so they interview. So I was curious to see what happened to Oops Animation Studio, and I think it's been they've been destroyed.
Now they're rebranded as Teehee.
They were destroyed.
they don't exist anymore. And I looked up what the only animator I think we got a credit for was Han Soo Kim, and he has had only like a few animation credits on IMDb. He worked on the Simpsons movie, Miles.
Ooh.
Oh. And then he hasn't worked on.
Sure the company is not rebranded as Teehee Animations now?
Teehee Animation?
You know, like, they say, oops, I dropped my bra.
Oh, I get it.
Teehee.
Teehee. Yeah. Uh-oh, animation. they keep going down the line.
Nerds.
That's a good. I like that. That's cute. That's cute. No, I think they stopped existing. Because Han Soo Kim, he has not worked like Monster Quest was one of the last things he worked on. Miles, he hasn't worked on anything since 2011, which I thought was kind of sad, because I wanted to see what they
left the desk and the computer behind to go into the natural world to find fucking Bigfoot, man.
Because okay, he and his team
walked in the closet out of which he never came.
Yeah. Don't go into those closets, man.
Don't go into those closets. Because he and his team, okay, Monster Quest hires them because they have a reconstruction based on the sour wine video of the creature that's going in and out of the water, right? And they're like, we're going to reconstruct what it looks like based on the video evidence. And you see their sketches and stuff, and they're like, their sketches are kind of funny, where it's like, not manatee XX. We do not want it to look like a manatee. And then Miles, they they get the render out, they get the image, and it just straight up looks like a skinny manatee. Like they've tried their hardest to make it not look like a manatee, but it just straight up looks like a manatee.
And the guy says, yeah, that pretty much looks like what he saw when they asked the guy who took the video. And I'm just like, yeah, it's a manatee, man.
It's a manatee. That's the thing is they have just like with humans, there's variations of manatees. They have slightly different head shapes, I'm assuming, and eyes further apart. Some of them are like Anya Taylor-Joy, right, Miles? They have further apart eyes than other people.
Speaking of bigger noses. Cryptozoological lore. The reconstructions of Cadborosaurus, did they also not have some sort of weird, like gnarly trident kind of tail arrangement? Because I remember one drawing that looked like that.
We did Ogopogo last episode.
Well, yeah, we talked about Cadborosaurus last episode, and you're right that they have like the, you're right, there's trident tailed Cadborosaurus illustrations.
Like, these guys should have hired you as rewrite man. And then you could have more flesh, like flesh yourself.
I mean, they have one idea that's somewhat interesting in the show that perhaps, okay, this is, a non-cryptozoological mammal. Perhaps it is the Caribbean monk seal, which was declared extinct in 2005. They don't really go into that much. They're just like, hey, there's a thing that it's extinct. Maybe it's that. Like, I don't really know why they think it's that.
Seal. It's a boring, flabby, blobby Bambi seal. I mean,
yeah. I mean, there's no disrespect to the Caribbean monk seal, but it's not like that extreme of an animal. Salient, I don't know why it's a good explanation.
One salient characteristic I note in like cryptid lore and maybe even conspiracy theories is that they latch onto these like larger than life concepts, like trident tail monster or like,
yeah.
And they like, those are the interesting things that, like, those concepts have, like, something about them, like, the weirdness or the artificiality. And, like, people pursue that. So little of cryptozoology is, like, I mean, like, if you look at manatees, you know, arguments could be made that there are undiscovered species of manatees in the Amazon or, like, maybe there are some... Mm. Different species of manatees that we all think are like one species, but no, they would never go for that. They would always go for the like larger than life or like this like single characteristic entity.
They just found a bunch of new underwater sea animals we didn't know about last week and no one even gives a shit.
Yeah.
That little puffy pig looking thing. It's nobody cares. There's no Monster Quest episode about it. No one gives a shit.
Like canceled Monster Quest, Miles, remember?
No, man, they bring it back.
They didn't bring it back.
They're actually working on a new kind of episode, Doug is. So.
Really? Oh, my gosh. Look at us.
I talked to Doug. We're friends, you know.
As we speak, I'm sketching out an illustration of the Florida trident tail monster as a realistic
Here we go. I'll put it in the chat. Here's a good steal of...
That's awesome. Because, Cozman, I remember a couple of years back, you remember there was that thing in
Greece.
In Greece, and you did a beautiful reconstruction of it that looks like a manatee relative.
So that case, let's like flesh it out for the listeners who don't know what it is. Like basically, there was a British tourist in the Greek island of Zakynthos. And he took this like really weird photograph that it really looks like counterintuitively quote unquote real, like as you described, like a manatee with an elongated face, and then they're like, oh, it was really, and then turns out it's a plastic seaboard fender.
Yeah, it was the seaboard.
I rolled along with it and made a realistic reconstruction, and it really looks like something that may have lived. So there's one of the joys.
Yeah, the reconstruction you did is very plausible. I like it.
One of the joys of cryptozoology in art, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the art makes you think about it in a different way too, you know? Mm. Like actually how it would function, like morphologically. So
I am actually drawing this monster now, and if I get my diversity visa green card, the three of us can find a reconstruction company named Teehee Oops Studios.
Yeah, we'll let them know. We'll get in touch with them.
All we will do will be creating these very realistic anatomical depictions of cryptids and also publishing sexy photos. I like to take pictures of myself too, and like, yeah, that's a killer business
plan. All right, we can work on that, and we can see if we can fit that in. Oh, also, of course, Trey, we do get a mention of official most hated fish of the podcast on this.
Oh, I remember that. He like literally brings it up. I hate when they always do. They're like, examples like coelacanth. They're like, shut up.
Shut the fuck up about that stupid, ugly fish. I never want to hear it.
I'm sick of it. Because it's like, you're right that like it is literally the go-to every single time. It's the go-to. And you're like, no. Yeah,
even a certain person who we're not going to talk about claims that their ancestor was the guy who discovered it.
Oh, yes. This is
because it has to be the origin of every bit of nonsense. I don't know why.
It has to be. It's the root of everything, Miles. It's like the
it's the, what it's is the it? Key to all of us.
It's the key. The nexus point to everything. Oh, my gosh. Coelacanth.
I like how they go back to the lady who said it's a manatee with all their new information they got. Like, by new information, I mean like the CG model they made. And they're like, what do you think now? She's like, yeah, it's a fucking manatee.
I like how she held her line. Yeah, that's my favorite part too. She's like, no, my opinion has not changed at all. It literally just looks like a manatee still.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's the episode pretty much. They have a good video, I guess. It's better than most because, like, I could see them being like, what the hell is that with the video? But, you know, it's fucking manatee, man. Like, what do you want? It's a manatee.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So I guess the lesson here is, yes, sometimes things can be damaged or have weird morphological features because of their environment, which can make them, if you see them partially, look like something that they're not. So if you just get a glimpse of it, that could be the source of a cryptid or folktale story. But we in the communication age can put all this information together and identify these as known normative animals.
I will say it is nice to have something tangible.
Like I said, it is a video.
And it's clear. Like, it's a relatively clear, stable video. You're not, like, seeing a blob squatch.
They did send the guy from the giant squid and Ogopogo episodes out after this thing, too. That same diver guy.
It's a waste of time.
Yeah, they went down there. They couldn't find anything.
They couldn't find anything. It was too murky.
Yeah, one of the hypotheses in the episode is there's all these, like, underground channels, so, like, the mangroves and stuff. So they're like, oh, maybe it's channeling through these, and that's why we don't see. I don't know why they think this, but
right,
you know, okay, sure. So they go looking for it. They see something 13 foot long on the sonar, and then they lose it because it's murky. Nothing happens.
That's a big Florida thing, the aquifer. The trope of the Florida aquifer. There could be anything down there.
Well, that's the like the veil of uncertainty is like their whole stick, right? Like that they got nothing. Yeah.
So. Like when does this show air on TV? Like which time of the night or day?
It used to air like
7 p.m. or something like that.
Yeah, like 7 p.m. And then they sometimes would have marathons on the show quite a bit. It doesn't air anymore, you know. But it was pretty popular for quite a while, so.
I mean, like, I got the like theory that like these shows all air towards probably like after dinner time or dinner time, where you know you're just switching your brain off, and you don't want to go to sleep yet, but you want to watch something that doesn't take up too much CPU, you know? So it's like,
well, you got to understand, there's a lot of Americans, they don't ever have their brain on, man.
So. Yes,
yeah, this is true. Do they? Okay. I mean, you're from there; you would know better.
Yeah, trust me.
All over the world. Like, there's this thing that, like, there's this time of day or the evening where you just need some, like, you just need to listen to some shit. Just need some.
I guess that's true.
Nitrogen gas in there, you know, like inert stuff. So I think
I know what you mean.
That's the niche for like. That's like the psychiatric / semantic niche for a lot of this content.
Well, look, we can't dog it too much. We're doing a fucking show about it, so
yeah. But I guess we've based our whole entire personalities against. Oh gosh, Monster Quest hits a yeah. I think Kozman's right. It hits like a special little. It tickles the imagination of your brain, right? Like especially as a little kid, I was like, oh, this is so exciting that. Bigfoots and werewolves exist and stuff.
Now you get to hear about the folk tales and stuff. Yeah. But, you know, it's interesting in some way. That's why we have a show. So, you know, whatever, man. Anyways, it's fucking Manatee, and that's the end of the episode. Nothing else really happens, and there's nothing else really to say about that.
You're right that, like, it just is a manatee, and they really didn't need to build a whole episode around this.
No.
Because, like, it would have been interesting for them to go into, like, some of the stuff with the medieval maps. Like, I would have loved to talk to, like, a historian, like a medieval historian or something, and talk about, like, well, the tusks of the boar, like the sea swine, are likely a misunderstanding of this, and they're bad reports of this. Like I think the history side's more interesting, but they never go into it. You know,
they could have, like, also talked about Orvish or something, you know, or do something. I don't know. They're just like, hey, look at this weird manatee. Maybe it's not a manatee. And then you're just like, but it is. And they're like, oh, well, it is. Bye.
It's cool to have something to look at, I guess. Yeah. And that's because especially with this show, there's usually you're just hearing people's stories. And you have nothing to back them up. There's no, like, bullshit. Tangible.
What'd you think, Kozman? Yeah. Do you have any last thoughts on this mediocre episode of Monster Quest?
Well, I think it was constructed around the footage. And, like, I'm sure, like, there was a writer for the show. And, like, they, like, wrote Trident Tale. And they put a circle around it. And then they constructed the whole thing around Trident Tale. Trident. And then, like... I mean, I'm guilty as charged. I did not watch this episode, but they're like, they don't talk to
you
anyone.
You son of a bitch, Kozman.
You were missing that much.
You come on this show, and you don't watch the episode.
Guilty as charged.
Damn.
But they don't talk to anybody about the maps, right?
No, they don't do shit, man. They just make a PS2. Weird looking manatee as proof. Or
but I also want to imagine, like, because I work in advertising, and like there's usually like a very silly production process for all of these things. Like whatever pap you see on screen, especially on the TV screen, like, it was a team effort, and like I just want to be a fly on the wall when they were like writing this like mediocre episode, especially. Like they were like, they must have been like really like, you know, it's work. Like sometimes work days are tiring and like it's a chore. And they're like, come on, guys, we got to find an angle for this. Look, we got this footage. We got like 2 days to write a script. And like, I just want to be a fly on the wall when they were doing that.
I think they were probably feeling pretty confident that they had a video that was finally not a blurry video.
You know? Yeah. So they really wanted that was going to do that. Yeah,
which, you know, they did. I guess.
Well, so, one of those 3 stars out of 5 kind of things.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a 4.
I'm gonna give it a 5.
5
because like they got the animation studio to make. I don't know. That's kind of interesting. Like I wish they did that more because it kind of reminds me, Miles, of remember that episode with the owl beast, like the Jersey Devil one, right? That was the Jersey Devil one. Where they made like a giant model, right?
Based that was on bad. That was pretty good. I gave it plus 2 stars for the model, you know.
Yeah, like I wish they did that more often. Where they just had like yeah, because it would be something to look forward to by the end of the episode. Like, well, look at this artistic model we made based on the eyewitness sketches and stuff. But yeah. Miles, next episode. I don't know how you're feeling. Mysterious Ape Island.
It's gonna be another Bigfoot one.
Bigfoot episode. And I think the one after that, Gigantic Killer Fish, we've seen that one already, right? We like combined it with Gigantic Killer Fish 1, right?
I think
it's been so long.
It's actually one of the higher rated episodes of the show too, Gigantic Killer.
I think we've seen it.
Okay, well, that'd be great.
And then after that is, oh God, after that, Miles is Isle of the Lost Tiger, where they go to Tasmania to look for something.
Well, maybe we'll have more. Maybe we'll have an update during that episode. We'll see how Trey's psyche is fucking.
That's like far enough away.
Yeah. All right. Well,
based, and thank you guys so much for inviting me. I can't tell you how happy this makes me.
Always good to talk to you, my friend.
I'm out of too much. I'm really like sometimes I get carried away.
We like you. And if you ever come to the States, you're welcome to stay at my place in Seattle and visit around. So.
Yeah.
And if any of you wants to visit this part of the world, you're more than welcome. As I said, and my word is my deed, and you only have to pay for your travel expenses. That's all. All
right. Awesome. Is Turkish Delight really something that's popular in Turkey?
No, it's like, it's basically, there's a form of it called kuş lokumu, which is Turkish delight for birds, and these are like the size of your pinky fingernail. Those are good, like those you can have and eat. But the other forms of Turkish delight, which are also known as lokum, it's too heavy. They're dusted with too much sugar, and I can name you like 10 much better desserts you could love and enjoy before you even begin to come to that category.
I see. So, well, I did. There's a Turkish like dessert place in the mall. I don't know how authentic it is, but I've been eating there. They have like kiwi pistachio stuff, and it's really good.
Oh, those are great. Those are great.
Yeah. I don't know how authentic it is. I'm ignorant, but I ate it and I really liked it.
Oh, well, I mean, like, I think food is something we really do well over this part. Over here in this part of the world, food, certain military stuff, textiles, I don't know, like every country's got its good things. Yeah. And like steaks. One day I could like talk 3 hours about Turkish food if you want.
Heck yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Well, we'll probably have you again on sometime, buddy. You're a friend of the show and we always like having you on.
Yeah.
Make sure you check out his stuff and his new projects, and if you want to get a commission, check that out too, because it's always a great way to support
you artists. You guys got a free commission now, because tonight I'm going to send you my illustration of the Floridian Trident Monster.
Oh, heck yeah. We'll use it for the thing we're going to post the podcast.
And that's that from me.
All right. Have a good day, buddy. Take care. I guess it's nighttime for you.
Bye, Cosmo. Good night.
Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
I thought I bored me, but I learned to think like you. Now nothing bores me, that's that. Nothing is thought through.